Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody out there, it's Kalen Patterson. Midwest Muscle P4P Real Talk. And this program is sponsored by Desiree's Laugh, P4P Muscles, and the number one drug-free sponsorship foundation in the world. If you are a drug-free athlete and enjoy Desiree's Laugh and are looking for a solid foundation to stand on and a vehicle to drive your goal like a Mack truck through ice cream, check us out at P4P Muscle for ice cream. And now, hey, let's talk. Hey, Des, how you doing?
I am most wonderful tonight. How are you doing, my friend?
I am doing wonderful. It's a great, other than the wind that we had through the Midwest, oh, my goodness. But that's another point. I'm just excited about tonight. You know me. I get really excited about good health and nutritional information.
Yes. Yes. And I believe that's exactly what we've got on cue for tonight.
Oh, thank God. Thank God. Let me tell you, this man, he comes from the house of good information. And it's almost like a tribe now. I swear they got wigwams like camping up everywhere, and it's just perfect because they got a little powwow going, and every time they get together, it's just more research and more good information. So, Mike, I'll let you introduce yourself to the natural community, and you can fill them in on what I didn't.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. Looking forward to your show. My name is Michael Wilkie. I'm a part of the DiDoc and Team K. I was actually part of the first group to become an owner of the DiDoc program about 10 years ago or so. That's, of course, headed up by Dr. Joe Klemczewski and Dr. Corey Probst, two just terrific people, the most knowledgeable in the business. I met Joe back in 2000 for my own competition prep services, and only being a kid at that time and having a couple competitions under my belt, when I went to his first, my first seminar at his here on the East Coast, that was it. You know, everything that I had learned before was nothing compared to what I've learned from him and since. And it's been great for me to be a part of this to the level that I am now, and being able to pass that knowledge on to my competitors, my clients, and so on and so forth. That really is just good, sound nutritional information. So I couldn't be happier to be a part of the organization.
And we couldn't be happy to have you here tonight, because there is actually going to be a lot of ground that we're covering. I mean, people may not recognize it, but there are several layers to nutrition, to dieting, to contest prep. And so that's what we're hoping to dive in tonight. And I think one of the first areas that we want to touch on is, because as you said, you have your own contest prep coaching business, if you will. Team K, very successful. We've had P4P athletes that have gone through your program that have done very well with that. And so you handle nutrition for contest prep dieting, but then also the off-season dieting as well. And as Kalen said, you know, we are big fans of good, sound information. And there's just a lot of misinformation going on out there right now on several fronts. But why don't we start with those two areas, the distinction between contest prep dieting and off-season dieting, and maybe try to tackle some of the myths or bad information that's out there along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so much bad information out there. You know, it kind of falls in line with, you know, we were talking a little bit about it before, the bro science approach, you know, where it's nothing but chicken and broccoli, you know, getting ready for a competition. And, it's absolutely mind-numbing to me when I hear that kind of stuff in my local gyms around here. You know, the guys walking around with a puffed up chest, carrying around the gallon jugs of water, and, you know, they got broccoli sticking in their teeth. You know, it's just kind of one of those things where, you know, there's more to contest prep dieting. And I really, when I'm working with my clients, my competitors, I really want them to not just think about the competition date itself. I want them to think long term, because one of the things that we don't take into consideration is the metabolism and what you're doing to your metabolism when you're dieting down for a competition. A lot of people don't realize that when you do diet down for a competition, you actually, after a certain point in time, your metabolism actually slows down. It's then mm-hmm. that point after the competition when your body's prime for that growth to really, you know, get that metabolism going again. But unfortunately, there's just that approach of after the competition, I'm going to eat as much food as I can so that I can, quote unquote, bulk up. And you bulk up all right, but not in the way that you want to. You're just putting on 25, 30 pounds within the first week or two, you know, and all that glycogen water from all the nonsense that you're eating after the fact is just, you know, being converted to fat after. But you are bulking up, right?
Yeah.
You sure are. But I'm going to stop you right there for a second, Michael, because one thing, I want to jump back to the metabolism. And I think that's an area that not a lot of people understand what's actually going on with it when you're going through contest stress. So can you just kind of give us a 10,000-foot view of, you know, what makes a healthy metabolism and what we need to do to be bolstering it instead of breaking it down, which I understand happens as part of the dieting process, but how do we protect it as much as possible throughout this process?
Yeah, absolutely, and that really is important. I mean, I think a lot of people, they just get too locked into a mindset of, you know, in the off season that they focus on, well, I'm not eating cheeseburgers anymore, I'm not, you know, stuffing pizza down, all these kind of things. I'm eating all the good things. I'm being, you know, healthy. I'm doing obscene amounts of cardio and stuff like that. But they don't really pay attention to what's really going to make them or break them, and that is the metabolism, and understanding what your metabolism is doing when you're dieting versus when you're not. A lot of people don't realize that when you're actually in off season, your metabolism is working for you much faster than it is when you're dieting for a competition because you're eating more. So when I'm working with my clients, I'm taking them through five different phases. I'm taking them through the transition phase, which is really just kind of getting them from those habits of the way they've been eating in the off season, the levels of food, the type of food, so on and so forth. We're then going to move into the core phase. And that's really kind of that point in the dieting process when we're really going to get that metabolism locked in for them to where they can start burning body fat at a consistent pace. But again, after a while, depending on how many weeks, months, whatever it might be, that's when that metabolism begins to slow down because you're not eating as much food. The best analogy that I can give, even my general population clients, you know, my professional, you know, the teacher or the businessman out there, even a stay-at-home mom.
The non-competing.
Exactly. Is helping them to understand that, you know, there are certain things that you can do to manipulate your metabolism, but as you begin to take that food away, as you're eating less, your metabolism slows down because it's very much like a fire. Think of like a fireplace or if you go camping or something like that. When you start a fire and you put that wood in the fire, it's going to burn nice and hot. But after a couple hours, the metabolism slows down. The fire starts to smolder. It's not as hot. It's not burning as fast. And again, same thing with dieting. After you're doing it after a long period of time, that metabolism will slow down. So what you have to do, like a fire, is throw more wood on the fire. And so that's when we get into the next point, which is the metabolic building phase of competition prep. And that's what I like to get my clients to start increasing their intake to do what I call eating into a competition. Because again, you know, we're dieting for months. Metabolism is slowing down because you're on lower levels of food. You're obviously training very hard, cardio if necessary. The metabolism is just hanging on for dear life. By actually increasing your intake, and I usually like to do that with carbohydrates, your metabolism actually begins to burn hotter, to burn faster, and you can actually get intake levels up to where you even were in the off season, and then ride that into the final phase, which is that fine-tuning or peak week. And I have so many clients come to me during that time, and they tell me they can't believe how much food that they're able to eat going into the week of the competition. And I explain to them that point about the metabolism. Your metabolism is just stoked. It's just, you put it in and you're burning it, you know, and you're actually ready to eat within another hour or two because you're just so hot. And, I had one client of mine, a competitor last year, who's a doctor, who told me that, you know, she couldn't believe how much food I was having her eat. And she said, "This is amazing. This goes against all of my medical training." And so that was fascinating to have that conversation with her, because it really isn't that, you know, what we learn necessarily in the textbooks.
No,
sure.
Not at all. And, you know, just to go back on that metabolism, just to piggyback what you're saying, because I love the way this direction is going and what you said about not just for the competition or the show, but you're talking the big picture, which is their health and their life. And I think that's
absolutely
what a lot of people get cut out of the knowledge part of it when they're,
mm-hmm.
like you said, they're so focused on getting to that show day, nothing else matters. And when I say that, I mean that very sincerely, that nothing else matters. All that matters is that show and the performance and that day. And it's like, okay, now after tomorrow, now what? Because, you know, you still got your health and your life to deal with.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just it. And you have to realize, you know, people have to realize that, you know, when you start dieting, you know, for extended periods of time, I mean, 6 months, a year, so on and so forth. I mean, you're scratching and clawing for every little bit. I mean, you're dragging your knuckles in the gym, you know, because you just have nothing. You're dragging your knuckles at work and at home because you're doing whatever you can to get a specific look. And, you know, when we work with our clients, you know, Team K and the diet doc, I mean, that's the last thing that we want. You know, that is the absolute last thing that we want to have happen for our clients. And it means that you have to start your process early enough, you know, so that you give yourself enough time so that you don't have to get aggressive. You are too aggressive, rather. It's called when I have clients coming to me and talk about, well, should I be doing this? And I said, there's no need for us to get too cute right now. I mean, I think that's a big mistake that people make, is they get on the internet and they read about all these crazy things that are out there and they start getting too cute, you know, and it's just, there's no need for it. You know, people think that, you know, oh, I was working with another coach and I was doing this 9 weeks out and all this, or I was doing this 3 weeks out. I said, well, you're not with that coach now. You're with me, you know, and this is how we're going to do it. And I guarantee you, not only are you going to have better results, but you're going to feel better in the process. Now, I'm not saying every one of my clients is doing cartwheels, you know, and they're feeling, I mean, but the point is they're not, we're not depleting them to the point where they can't function in daily life.
Yes.
Yep. I mean, and that's important, because that's a lot of, you know, if you hear a con to this sport, that's where it falls along the lines of, you know,
exactly.
being able to not eat, to not drink water, to not. It's always, well, what can't I do? And that's not always the healthiest route to go either. I mean, depending on where you started and your show date, you know, maybe you were too aggressive with picking a date, and, you know, sometimes extreme actions have to happen if you are dead set on hitting that show. Okay, I get that. I understand that. But, you know, the process doesn't have to be, it does have its sacrifices, but it doesn't have to be so miserable that you're questioning, why am I even doing this in the first place? So then let's break it down. So distinctions between contest prep dieting and off-season dieting. What is it you've got for us in those areas?
No, absolutely. I think, again, I kind of alluded to it earlier where, you know, if I have a competitor who's, you know, has a competition coming up in, you know, let's say 4 or 5 months, I want to make sure that, you know, we're doing the things necessary to get them ready for that competition without getting too crazy. But I'm also going to be developing the plan the final week with the competition prep and looking and going into the post-competition, the months after that. What kind of plan of attack are we going to have to ensure that we can get you to where you need to be and so you don't feel that you're always dieting? Now, what happens is I think the biggest challenge for a lot of competitors is being able to maintain that level of physique that they had going into the competition. A lot of folks don't realize that it's just not really, I don't want to say it's not possible, but darn if it's not extremely difficult. And so that's why I like to start talking with my clients, just alluding to it the week of the competition about what our plan of attack is going to be after the competition. The biggest mistake that I see out there with competitors, and actually, interestingly enough, I have a general population client right now who has a coworker who she talks to quite a bit about this stuff, and you know, she's a client of mine, one of those few out there who's actually trying to gain weight. And so what I have her doing is, you know, certain things with her nutrition and her training to help her put on weight. She's a classic ectomorph, but she has this coworker of hers telling her to just, you know, the, what he does to put on weight is he stuffs himself with all this food, you know, and he just puts on 25 pounds, 30 pounds in, you know, in a month or something like that. And, you know, and he just gets huge. And then when he's ready to diet down for the summer or whatever, he has a party or something like that, or a wedding he has to go to or something like that, an event, then he's just going to do all this cardio. He's going to starve himself. And, yeah, you're going to lose weight, but you're going to lose a lot of that muscle that you put on. And, again, you're absolutely destroying your metabolism. So I want to make sure that when I have my competitors going from that competition prep diet into the off season, that it is a very methodical process in terms of how we start to get their food intake levels back up to a point that's going to really get that metabolism stoked. So, you know, what I might do with one particular client is the day after the competition, just kind of give them a day to, you know, get themselves back down to earth. You know, as you know, Keelan alluded to, you know, it's all that matters at that time as you're getting into it, you know, and it's, you know, you're not thinking about anything else. All your energies are going to this, and, you know, your focus is just not, you know, where perhaps you'd like it to be. So just give them that day to recover. And then within that next week to kind of get the metabolism back going again, bring them back to reality, is I might drop their protein levels a little bit and then slowly start taking their carbohydrate and fat levels up a little bit. To really, again, stoke the metabolism, get a little bit of glycogen in them so that they can, you know, prime their body for some hard training and again, ultimately muscle growth. But, you know, clients who try to keep their levels too low for too long after that, they find that they really struggle long term in terms of and that leads them then into their next competition because their metabolism are just so burnt out that, you know, we're having to do whatever we can to get any type of positive results. So,
well, you know, also when you think about it, like you were saying, there's so many people that, and I say this a lot, and I mean it in all sincereness. It's just there's so many people that want to help, but it's only so many people that know how to help and have the way to get you where you're going. And I just don't understand why people get a coach. And it's almost like they're trying to undercut them or basically go back door to find something like, ah, I got you. You know, but you're talking about somebody that's basically getting you ready and prepping you. And it's like you're constantly derailing yourself with other information that's really not necessary, especially when you talk about, you know, somebody on a Team K kind of level where you know that it's scientifically backed. So I don't see why the bro science should even try to intercede on that.
But again, you'll get some of them out there who follow that mentality and they'll have some success. But again, with what I do and what we do in Team K, we're thinking long term. I mean, you'll find a lot of people, and it's just my opinion. I mean, I'm just basing it on what I personally see. What I hear is that, you know, not everyone hits on that bro science approach. I mean, they'll go in and they might be, you know, super lean and all that, but really, you know, come contest day, they look like a deflated balloon. You know, their muscles aren't full. They aren't hard. There's no separation, you know, as much as could be. And they end up not taking a top spot or perhaps they miss, you know, that top spot by a couple points. I mean, it, the differences that we take with some of these other, you know, approaches out there is that really with peak week, when we're working with our competitors, we really want it to be as uneventful as possible. Now, that's not to suggest that we're not changing anything. We certainly are. But all this business of, you know, carb depleting and then carb loading and water depleting and all this business, I just, you know, again, it's a heck of a gamble. And for a lot of people, it's not going to hit. I really, you know, it's funny because I'll have competitors come in to see me who've worked with other coaches and, you know, I ask them to bring me whatever they have with them in terms of what they might be doing for diet at that time so I can kind of get a sense of, you know, what they've been doing. So it just allows me to better customize their program for them. And I'm always fascinated to when a competitor brings in, and it's actually quite often that this happens, is that they'll bring their menus in that they said their previous coaches wrote up for them. And it really is just a lot of protein, very minimal, you know, starchy complex carbohydrates, a lot of vegetables, of course, and next to no, you know, dietary fat intake. And I asked, let me ask you, you know, Desiree, how many grams of protein, carbs, and fats are you consuming? Well, I don't know. My coach wrote this up for me.
Yeah.
So I'll look at it, and I'll say, you really like to eat ostrich? You know, this is what they have on their menu. Like, no, not really, but this is what I have to do. I'm like, well, that's one way to do it, but it's not the only way. It's not what you have to do to be successful. So, you know, it's just that mentality of – I actually – what I call is that 1990s approach. I grew up in the 90s, and, you know, that's the way that I was taught, you know, was the whole water depletion the week of and very minimal carb. It's called ketogenic dieting. Of course, you both know that, you know, and it's just it's a great way to really just, you know, kick the heck out of your metabolism, not really get the best results that you can on competition day. And then again, going into the off season, you know, the example that I give my clients is when you take that bro science approach and, you know, you follow these menus that are written up for you, you know, you take a cup of dry rice or oatmeal, you know, let's say it's a half a cup. What happens when you add water to that? It's going to expand, right? That half cup becomes
half
a cup. You know, so when you go back to quote unquote normal healthy dieting or eating, you know, that's how people put on 25, 30 pounds. And these are people who aren't even crushing the pizza and the cheeseburgers the week after. You know, they're legitimately trying to add size. Again, you're adding size, just not the kind of size that you want to add. So I really work hard at making those distinctions with my competitors and, again, even my general population clients.
So we've talked a lot about, okay, so adding size, people bulking, they're adding size, but it's not necessarily the right kind of size. I mean, what would you recommend then for someone who's out there that's what they think, well, I'm just going to eat to excess so I can put on the size that I want. What's the better way to do that?
Well, again, I see it too often out there with people and some of the folks that I talk to who I may not obviously necessarily directly work with. But, you know, when you do take that approach, and it is, what I personally call that 1990s mentality of I'm just going to eat as much food as I possibly can. I'm going to lift as heavy as I possibly can. I'm just going to get jacked. I'm going to get huge. You know, you're going to – the type of, you know, huge that you're going to get is just nothing but body fat. You know, you're going to put on some muscle. I mean, because obviously you're able to lift heavier resistance, which obviously is one way to build more muscle tissue. But again, because you're putting on so much extra weight, you know, through all the food that you're consuming, obviously, you know, we're assuming that you've actually cut back on your cardio. Yeah, those, you know, your fatty acids or your fat cells, excuse me, are opening up, you know, and they're inviting all that excess glycogen in, you know, from all the carbohydrates that you're consuming. You know, and again, people, I think they don't want to be honest with themselves, you know, when they take their shirts off and they look in the mirror and they see that, yeah, you definitely put on size, but, you know, you can't see your abs anymore and you got love handles hanging over and all this, but it's just for some reason they have that mentality that I put on muscle, so I'm going to be able to, you know, rip down and I'll have all this muscle. You know, that I put on. Well, no, you won't, because again, you've only given you, and that's that other idea that it takes 3 months to get ready for a competition. Again, that's a very 1990s mentality. You know, it doesn't take 3 months to get ready for a competition. It takes as long as you need as an individual to get ready. I've had clients get ready in 12 weeks. I've had clients get ready in 20 weeks, you know, and even longer than that, upwards of 6-8, you know, months, even a year. You know, you have to take the amount of time necessary that you need. And so getting back to the off-season approach, I kind of went off on a tangent there, that off-season approach, what I want my clients to do is I'm going to look at their levels of where they're at going into the day of the competition. And then from there, it's going to be a very slow process. And I think that's the challenge that a lot of folks have is, they, you know, we're not patient. You know, we want it now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I competed in April. I better look like Arnold in May, you know, and it's just not going to happen. If you're thinking long
term, it doesn't happen.
Really, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And so, again, with my approach, I take a much different approach where, again, I want to pull back on the protein just a little bit, nothing crazy, because, again, that's going to allow for more carbohydrates. So if I have a client who is consuming, I'm just throwing an easy number out there, 100 grams of carbohydrate, I might take them up by, 40 or 60% in carbohydrates, just, again, a very nice, subtle amount, maybe take their total fat grams up by 5%, nothing crazy. But what happens is that even though protein does build muscle tissue, we know that carbohydrates are more muscle sparing. Plus, they're also going to allow for more fuel while you're training. And when you have that fuel going into your workout, you're doing squats, you're doing bench, whatever it might be for your workout, you're actually setting yourself up for better growth long term. And, and if people can just take the time to dissect that and to understand that, it will help them so much. Now, and again, and their weight will go up slowly. So if you have a competitor who's 150 pounds, I want to keep them, in the off season. I don't want them getting much heavier than about 160 pounds. I go, kind of anywhere from that 7 to 15 pound, range in there after the competition. Because again, when you put on that 25, 30 pounds, you're having to diet so hard and so long and doing all this cardio that, again, that's what causes you to lose that muscle. And I think that's kind of why I went off on that tangent earlier, because people think I'm going to take 3 months. Well, no, if you're putting all that body fat, it's going to take much longer than 3 months. And, again, you're going to look like a starved, cardio king, queen, whatever, rock star up there. But again, you're not going to have the physique to go with it.
That's right.
No, and I would have to think psychologically, too. I mean, that yo-yo is the type of thing that we're always preaching against, but yet we think just because we can do it or feel like we have more control over it, that why not? Let's go for it.
Yeah.
And, we're supposed to be the examples of health, but we're doing all the things that we would advise, someone in the general population, which always makes me think of a prison when we use that term, but of the general population, we're going to advise them of what not to do, but then we're going to go ahead and do it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think one of the biggest challenges for folks out there, another big challenge out there for folks, is they live and die by the scale. They see a number on that scale and they lose their minds. I mean, we get this idea, exactly. We get this idea in our head that, I have to weigh X to be successful. And it's just not the case. I mean, and it's so hard, though, because, again, social media has pounded it into us, our favorite celebrities, whoever it might be, our favorite bodybuilders, oh, she's this height and she weighs this much and I want to look like her, so that's what I need to do. You're crazy. It's not what you need to do. I can remember going to the Arnold Classic in 2007, and I was sitting and listening to Arnold's seminar he was giving, and even back then, it was great to actually hear him say it, because he was talking about he can't believe the state of the sport at that time, where these people are doing the no carb, these bodybuilders are doing the no carb dieting, and they're just doing hours and hours and hours of cardio, and they're trying to get their weight to a certain number on the scale and so on and so forth. And I mean, to have somebody like him say that, I think it's important, because more people need to listen to somebody like him. And there's just those other professionals, not just him, of course, but those other professionals out there and the people who know what they're doing. And again, it can't be something where it's just do what your coach says and trust the process. That mm-hmm. is the absolute last thing. If I tell my clients ahead of time, when I have a competitor, even a general population client of mine, sit in my chair and I tell them, I say, if I tell you to do something, or if I advise you on doing something, and I don't tell you why I'm having you do that or what to expect, you need to ask for your money back. You need to fire me. Because you have to understand the process. You have to understand why you need to have X carbs in, or why you don't necessarily need to do this much cardio, or why, this is going to happen when you do this. And I think, there's too many folks out there, general population and competitors, who just – they trust the process, or they see what so-and-so did on the internet, and, they end up just getting themselves in a lot of trouble, down the road.
Oh, my goodness, yes. And, well, that brings up two points, and the first one would be that some people actually still believe that you can turn fat into muscle. or vice versa.
Water in the wine.
Yeah.
Water in
and
the wine.
The second one. The second one is, you know, now that the information's out there, and like you said, that people can follow it, they see, you know, hey, Dr. Joe and Diet Doc works. And then somebody does a spinoff with this little, and then it goes back to false information. So it's actually you're transitioning from bro science to basically a gimmick that's basically modified bro science.
Absolutely, and I think it's what's happening is there's, you know, everybody's an expert out there. You know, everybody, somebody, you know, won a competition back in 1985, and you know, so now they think they can, you know, train everybody and coach. My favorite, my absolute favorite, I love it, is when I have one of my competitors come into my office and, you know, they were down at their local gym, you know, that day or the day before, whatever. And, you know, their physique is starting to change and so on and so forth. They'll be talking to whoever it might be that's in the gym. And, you know, this person, you know, again, may have competed, you know, 50 years ago. And, you know, they get in and they say, hey, you competing? Oh, yeah. And then they start asking what they're doing and say, oh, you should start doing this with your protein and you should be doing that and you should be doing this. I remember I had one female competitor of mine come in, and she told me that one of the members down at the gym there was telling her that she should be taking in. I swear to God, she should be taking in 400 grams of protein a day to help build muscle tissue.
Does it matter how much she weighs?
But I will say she weighed about 125 pounds. But she should be taking in 400 grams of protein a day so she can, you know, just be absolutely huge and ripped. I swear to God, one day, you know, 30 years from now, I'm going to write a book about all these kind of things I hear, just kind of these funny, you know, little passages of all this
nonsense.
I'll
make sure it's in the comments.
I've heard over the years. Absolutely. It would have to be. You know, it's just there's just so much nonsense out there. And like you said, what happens is, I think because everybody's an expert out there, they want to take something that works, that they see, you know, they go to the competition with their clients and they see our clients coming in, and we just have a tremendous following. I mean, we have more than 300 pro cards, more than 300 pro titles, more than 100 pro titles. And you know, a lot of those competitors out there see that, and those coaches, so they are taking what we have, they're putting their own little tweaks to it so that they can, you know, distinguish themselves from us. And like you said, you know, it does revert back to, you know, just a modified version of bro science. And you know, one of these days, you know, people, like I said, you know, I personally am seeing the shift now. I'm getting more of those competitors in now, because I think people really are starting to begin to see the light. You know, I've had people come up to me and say, you know, what have you done with your kid? She looks so full. She looks hard. She's nice and lean. Or your bikini competitor isn't looking like she's – all she does is cardio and she doesn't lift any weights, you know, kind of thing. I actually make posts on that with my bikini competitors, you know, showing them actually lifting weights and not just the pink dumbbells either. You know, so, you know, there is a better way to do it out there.
Oh, you did not go there with just a pink weight, Michael.
You know you've thought it. Come on now. No, I know you're not using those pink weights. Come on.
I can't even imagine any woman who called herself a bikini competitor that would even think that was weightlifting. But anyway, I digress. So I do want to switch up a little bit. And I want to talk more about the general population, my mom, my aunt, my cousin, you know, my Uncle George that's been heavy for 30 years and arthritis is setting in. Because, you know, what people think is the hardest part of this process is the exercising, and it's actually not. It's the food, or at least from my perspective.
Absolutely.
That always seems to be the tougher part of it. You know, what... for anyone who's listening who's out there thinking, well, I have no interest in being a bodybuilder. I don't know what he's talking about. I don't know what glycogen is. How do we break this down into some layman terms on just processes, things that you're doing with your clients that's going to make sense to the general public out there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the biggest distinction that I make between contest prep dieting and general population dieting is the example I give with my clients is that when I have a competitor who's working with me, they're dieting. There's very little margin for error, especially, you know, X amount of time out from that competition. But with, you know, Susie Smith, who's a teacher at the local high school, you know, who just wants to be healthy, lose a couple pounds, she's dieting. Mm-hmm. She's doing it a little bit differently. It's what we call flexible dieting. We want to ensure that Susie Smith can, you know, eat the foods that she enjoys. She can live the lifestyle that she wants. She is going to be making some, she's more than likely going to be making some changes to her choices when it comes with the type of food that she's consuming, the amount of food that she's consuming. But it's not going to be so much where she gets to the point of feeling as though she is restrictively dieting. And, you know, I really want to make sure that those general population clients understand that, you know what, it's okay if you have ice cream during the week. It's okay that you have a piece of pizza during the week. Pasta is not bad. If you have too much pasta too often, that's where it becomes an issue. I just had that conversation with a brand new client this past week who, you know, she's talking about going out to dinner with her boyfriend, and, you know, she was kind of being, you know, trying to be, I guess, funny, but kind of seeing if it was okay too, where she said, I know I can't have dessert, you know, when we go out to, and I said, why can't you do that? You know, and she's just starting off, but what I would teach her, what I'm going to be teaching her is that when you're going to do that type of thing, when you want to have a time where you can go out and enjoy yourself and not feel like, you know, all I can have is a salad when I go out to a restaurant, I want to make sure that I teach my clients, my general population clients, how to build those kind of meals into their diets, into their menus for that day. You know, that might mean if you're normally eating six meals in a day, maybe you're only eating four or five meals, because that one meal that you eat out is going to be more than likely a bit larger, but not to the point where it's too big, where it causes you to store more glycogen, more carbohydrates than you want to at one specific time. But also show them, too, that there are certain things that they can do to the other meals that they're having that day that will allow them to ensure that a good meal and maybe even a little dessert can fit in and not sabotage them. You know, the biggest challenge that I have is, again, kind of what I just said, as far as just helping those clients that realize that, you know what, you don't have to have that mindset that I can never have ice cream again or whatever it is for you. Maybe it's chocolate or bread, you know, something like that. You know, I really try to get away from, with those types of clients, you know, the whole idea of no carbs after 2 p.m. or no dairy or something like that. Now, obviously, yeah, that's a tough one for you, huh? You know, it's one of those things where, you know, if you have obviously certain, you know, medical concerns, lactose issues, obviously stay away. But yeah. I mean, really to say you're not going to have, you know, skim milk or Greek yogurt or cottage cheese or something like that. And just in my mind, it's just not realistic for Susie Smith. You know, Susie Smith has to make two dinners for her family. She has to, you know, make a nice, you know, meal for her husband and her children. But then she's off to the side just having her salad, you know, by herself. That's not reality. You know, that person is going to lose weight initially during those first couple of weeks because, you know, anytime you change your habits, you know, you're going to have some weight loss. But again, what we want to work on, what we want to focus on is permanent weight loss. When I'm working with those clients, I want to make sure that the habits that they develop, the actions that they take, the strategies that we implement are not just a means to an end. So if we're focused on, I'm going to just cut out all alcohol and I'm going to pull back on all going out to eat and I'm going to do that for a month or I'm going to do that for 3 months until I reach my goal. My first question after they say that is, okay, what are you going to do after that? How are you going to be able to sustain that? Well, I'll worry about it we're going to worry about it now because this is the problem that you've had. This is why you're here to see me now, because all those other approaches that you've taken haven't worked for you. You know, Desiree alluded to it about the yo-yo dieting and stuff like that. You know, 98% of people who lose weight gain it back, you know, within the first year, 107% of that weight, you know, within the first couple years. because again, they just took extreme measures to lose that 30 pounds, that 40 pounds, that 100 pounds, that it's not anything that the actions that they took are just nothing that they can sustain for a lifetime. So flexible dieting is key, and really having them focus on habits that work for them as an individual, not what worked for their friend, their coworker, their husband, their wife, but works what works for them as an individual.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me when people get that extreme, it's almost like taking a great-looking car and then going into demolition derby and just beating the hell out of that poor thing and then driving out with all kinds of leaks and bends and, like, bumps and can't figure out why you can't drive 15 miles an hour.
Exactly. And then they're scratching their head, exactly why, you know, why they can't keep the weight off. Again, because that article that they read on the internet, or that even though they might be they're not somebody who ever wants to, you know, to get on the get on stage, you know, they're reading about someone, their favorite competitor, you know, favorite movie star, and what they're doing. And again, I really hope that one day we just see this dramatic shift, you know, and people really starting to realize what's that now.
I said I am praying for that day.
No, yeah, absolutely, because, you know, people, you know, I'm starting to see it myself, but I really like to see just this huge shift and really kind of see, you know, these other programs fall by the wayside, because really it's not even about competition, you know, oh, they're my competition, or, oh, you know what, it's nothing like, it's just not healthy. It's just, you know, these people are developing these health concerns and these health issues, and then, you know, okay, maybe they're fortunate enough to get around the health concerns, but now we've developed new issues such as self-image issues and, you know, body dysmorphia and all these kind of things. And again, going back to the scale, they're living and dying by the scale, you know. And
yes,
it's a total mind game, and it's just unfortunate, very sad to see.
And it's overtaken their life to the point where, you know, I see it's almost like, you know, you like Dennis was saying, you sacrifice some things, you know, in order to reach your goals, but you're never prepared to be a living sacrifice. And that's the part I think people say, you know, it's I'm all in, and they mean even to death, and that scares me. I'm frightened that, you know, you could have somebody that's that willing and that gung-ho, and then you screw up their life and their metabolism and their health, basically, and their future, just because you say, well, if we do it exactly my way, then this is how it works. And then it's not working at all, because basically it's just to have you as you're the trophy for the coach, but your health is shot. And that's all you have now for the rest of your life is to think back to that day and that moment, because now the rest of your life sucks.
But what happens is we think about, I want it now. I need this now. I need this today. And I could be guilty of that myself in some areas of my life. That's certainly something that, you know, I have no problem admitting
that's
to.
That's between
that
you
I'm
and your wife.
On.
We don't have no
experience. Yeah. You know, but that was cold. You know, but it is one of those things that if people realize that it goes back to, you know, what was it, Aesop's fable, you know, who wins the race, you know, slow and steady wins the race, you know, and if you can take approach where, you know, it's just one little bit at a time, one little bit at a time, one little bit at a time, you know, you're not even going to be paying attention, you know, 2-3 years from now, you'd be like, oh, damn, wait a minute. I'm still, you know, 130 pounds, or I'm still 180 pounds, you know, if I'm, you know, and I'm in shape, I haven't put the weight on. My favorite clients are those, like I said, I had a couple in today, you know, they lost 70 pounds each, a married couple, 70 pounds each. And that was back in 2009. And to this day, that 70 pounds is still off. And, you know, it's just great. And these are just business owners in my community. They're not athletes at all. You know, they exercise X amount of time, you know, during the week. So, I'll digress for a moment. That's the other mindset that I think a lot of people take, is that they can out-train a bad diet. You know, I'm gonna do all this work in the gym, and I'm gonna do. And then it's so fascinating to me to hear the next day how they were at the club that night, or they were at the buffet, or they were doing this, or, you know, and they were watching the game, and they had all their friends over, and they just crushed all this food. But I'm gonna get up the next day and go do my cardio. that's one way to do it, but it's not my way. You know, it's, and again, I think what happens to a lot of people, that mindset is it, when it's restrictive, you know, it's like when you tell a child not to do something, don't do this, don't do this. What do they want? That's going to be the first thing they want to do. You know,
first thing they
want to
do,
if I'm telling them, exactly. So if I'm telling my clients, you know, don't eat ice cream, don't do this, don't do that, don't do that. You know, they're going to listen at first, but after a fashion, they're going to start, you know, they're going to start reverting back to those old ways. So I get a client in front of me. I want to see what it is they've been doing. And then what I want to do is I want to, it's what I call getting them comfortably uncomfortable. You know, even if it's not a good, healthy situation for them, you know, they, you know, they're, you know, eating, you know, breakfast, maybe they're not really having anything for lunch. They then, you know, have a huge dinner of God knows what. And then, you know, an hour later, they're sitting in the recliner, elbow deep in the potato chip bag watching the Kardashians, you know, and they can't figure out why the hell they can't lose weight, you know. And it's you know, it's one of those mindsets where, you know, when you say, I can't have chips, I can't have chips, I can't have chips, you know, you're going to be in trouble long term. If we can find a way to build in those chips, to build in that ice cream or to build in that alcohol, whatever it might be for you as an individual, that's when you're going to find long-term you have success. So I'm working with that client. I'm going to see what habits that they're taking now. I'm going to see how much food they're consuming. I'm going to make the necessary adjustments to their overall intake first. And that's based on a lot of variables. The whole cookie cutter design template, I just wrote an article about this, you know, template-based dieting, cookie cutter design, a one size fits all approach does not work. It doesn't work.
It can't.
What works for Desiree is not going to work for Pamela. You know, what works for me isn't going to work for you know, we're all different. We all have different weight loss issues. We all have different body types. We all have different schedules, likes, dislikes, all these kind of things that we have to take into consideration. And so I'm going to look at all that with that general population client. And then again, I start with the intake. I make the necessary adjustments. And believe it or not, in some cases, I actually have clients who need to eat more than what they were doing. Because, again, their metabolisms are so shot. So by giving them a little bit more food, they actually stoke the fires of their metabolism. They get it burning hotter and faster. Then they find that, one, not only are they actually starting to see positive results, but interestingly enough, they just kind of feel better in general. I know that's a weird concept when you're doing this, but it is something that's possible, you know. And so when I do that, then I'm starting to monitor and assess their logs. They'll track and log what it is that they're eating in a day, you know, if they're working out or not, you know. And I'm not just looking to see whether or not they hit their total intake for the day, their targets for the day. I want to see how their day was, what it looked like to get to that point, you know, what kind of meals, how many meals did they have, what did their meal spacing look like, you know, again, what types of food did they have, but what food combinations did they put together? You know, did they set up their pre-workout meal properly? Did they set up a good proper post-workout meal? All these kind of things that allow them to be just as successful as a top-notch competitor, obviously just maybe not, you know, having the same type of six-pack. You know, it's got to be an approach that works for them. And, you know, what I have one client do in terms of process and approach is, again, isn't necessarily going to be the same for the next. So individuality
is the key. I mean, it's the name of the game for all the reasons that you listed before: body type, hormones, lifestyle, all of that kind of stuff. And if one plan did fit all, we would be a nation of skinny people by now.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just not the case.
Well, you have to say skinny.
No. Okay, not skinny. Fit. Is
that
better?
I don't like that word. Lean.
There you go.
I don't like that word. Lean. Lean. There's something we can agree on. I have a question. It's not totally off topic, but one that I want to jump back to. So tracking your food, knowing exactly what you're eating, it's like the bane of existence for anyone who's coming into the new world of nutrition.
Isn't it a big pain in the butt?
Do you have?
Yeah.
It is. Nobody wants to do it. Nobody wants to do it. You would say, well, I need you to keep a nutrition journal of XYZ, and I can't even describe the blank look that's on their face, like, oh my gosh, what?
Yeah, exactly.
But
I didn't sign up for this.
I don't know. I didn't sign up to do homework. I signed up for you to make me leaner. That's what I signed up for, not to work.
Yeah.
So what pieces of trade do you have? I mean, is there anything you found that has made it easier for your clients to stay on track with a nutrition journal? or
their app, or whatever
it is that they're using.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and again, it goes back to that individuality thing, personalities. You know, I have some clients who are so type A, it's actually can be quite maddening sometimes because, you know, I think they get caught up in the details. But I'd rather work with somebody like that than somebody who's going to have just an attitude of not wanting to, again, what I call get comfortably uncomfortable. And again, tracking and logging, we actually just had a conversation about this today with a couple of our owners in the organization. And it's a very difficult thing to do for some people because, again, they're not used to taking the time to really research the food that they're eating. And we're not just talking about looking at the ingredients, but looking at, you know, how much protein, carbs, and fats are in something. And one of my favorite things hearing from a new client when they begin tracking for the first time is, oh, my gosh, I can't believe how much fat and carbohydrates were in that salad that I had at the XYZ restaurant. Exactly. I mean, and so one thing that I have kind of something that I give my clients to think about when they begin that tracking and logging process is, and I know it's not the case for everybody, but, you know, it's one of those things I ask them. So let me ask you this. Do you approach your finances in the same manner where you don't set up a budget for yourself? You know, what happens when you set up a budget for yourself and you can see where what money's coming in versus what money's going out? You can see where it's going and where you need to make adjustments. You know, maybe I can pull back here a little bit. Maybe I can put a little bit over here. It's the same thing with your food. When you begin to take that time to track and log, it really does allow you to get a big picture of what's really happening. You can actually see that, yeah, absolutely, you've been really eating great foods, but unfortunately you're eating too much. You know, it's when you understand that, you know, you have to fall within a certain range of macronutrients, protein, carbs, and fats, so that you could be successful, and then you can see what it is that you're having. As a matter of fact, I just had an email come in from a client of mine before we got on the phone tonight that said she started tracking again. She had, you know, she had gotten caught up in some things with business and so on and so forth. So she wanted to get back to the good habit of tracking. And one of the things that she said in her email, she says, wow. And I really thought that I was doing good, you know, these past couple weekends when I wasn't tracking, but as it comes to find out, I was actually consuming about 75, 80 grams more carbohydrate than I should have been in a day, even though the choices were really healthy. So it really, again, does allow you to get a big picture perspective of what's going on. So I provide my clients with an electronic journal, electronic workbook that they can use that, you know, a lot of people who have, you know, jobs sitting at a desk, they can just plug their foods in while they're eating, you know. I also provide a manual journal for if you're on vacation or maybe you're at the restaurant that you can just scratch it down with a pen in your journal and then transfer it over to the electronic workbook. I know that the apps out there are all the rage. The one thing, the big downside with a lot of those apps, though, is that they provide you with a calorie target or a macro range that's just ludicrous. You know, I got one of the more popular ones a couple weeks back just to kind of see, and it said I should be eating about 300 grams of carbs more than what I know I should be eating, and that was to lose weight. And it's like, and that's the problem. People are going out and they're doing this, and they don't realize that, you know, these apps don't really know what the heck it is they're talking about. They just allow you to see what it is that you're consuming in the day. So, you know, it really is a fine line with certain clients of whether or not I'll you know, advise them to use an app just because of time purposes, and then they can transfer that over to the resources I provide for them. But I just ask clients, you know, to first start off, just start with a week. You know, just do it for 1 week, and let's see what we see. And then from there, we'll see if we can implement some strategies that make it a little bit easier. You know, I'll have clients where, you know, if I know this is something that's just completely brand new for them, I'm going to just have them start with tracking their actual meals and the time of day. I'm not going to have them necessarily worry about how many macros that they're actually consuming. I can do that for them just by looking at what they're doing. But then what's going to happen is I'm going to gently nudge them in that direction where they start looking at the back of the oatmeal container. Or they start looking at, you know, the packaging of the chicken breast that they're consuming. Or they start getting online, you know, looking at all the food count resources, CalorieKing.com, and, you know, all those other ones out there. and just kind of start getting a better idea of how many grams of protein, carbs, and fats are in the foods that they're consuming. And then they get to a point that they can look at an apple, you know, at the grocery store and say, oh, I know that apple has 25 grams of carbohydrates in it. You know, and then down the road, they're more prone to make better choices because they're now educated. And that goes back to my point of not just me telling you what to do. I'm going to do that, but I'm going to tell you why you do that. So essentially, you can become your own best nutritionist. And again, mm-hmm. when you log and track, that's just one of the big, big resources that you can use to do that.
Good point. Just to piggyback what you said, and this just happened this morning, so, you know, it's kind of crazy. But, you know, even talking about bread, this lady was talking about having gluten allergies, and I was like, well, you know, let's just talk about what you're, you know, what kind of bread are you eating? What do you mean what kind of bread? Bread's bread. No, there's certain kinds that it's been beat up so bad it's not even considered bread. It's just bread-like. Mm. And then I explained to her about the ice cream that's not really ice cream. It's just ice cream-like. I said there's so many things that aren't really what they're significantly supposed to be, but that's what the brand says. This is supposed to be ice cream, but it's not ice cream. It's ice cream-like. And this is supposed to be bread, but it's not really bread, it's bread-like. And I said, some of it's been pulverized so bad that there's no nutritional value in it. I said, so you might be having an allergic reaction to that. And by the time we were done, she just cocked her head to the side and basically like, what the are you talking about? I mean, she was just so just frustrated. And I said, well, you know, I'll show you what I'm talking about. And when I showed her, she's like, oh, then everything I've been taking is bad. And I said, it doesn't have to be. You know, I said, don't get hard on yourself like you're doing something wrong. You didn't know. And that's, I think, the biggest thing, like you were saying, Mike, is that there's just so much out there that's misinformation. But people say, you know, like you said, if you want weight gain, then eat it up. You know, eat it up. Just throw yourself down and become one of the clumps. And it's not working because people are just walking around, you know, just floating over these dang football stadiums and can't figure out why people are calling them blimps.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it goes back to that we're so susceptible to the marketing and the social media and so on and so forth. You know, one of my favorites, you know, from you know, years back was the whole net carb thing, you know, where, mm-hmm. you know, I, you know, the packaging, you don't see it anymore now, at least I don't, you know, where, you know, the packaging will say net carbs is only 5 grams, you know, and it's, no, it, you're still counting all of the carbohydrates in there. And, you know, again, so that was all the rage. And then, you know, and then the ketogenic dieting is all the rage. And, you know, everybody now has a gluten allergy and everybody's, you know, has the thyroid and all these kind of things. And a lot of these people haven't even been diagnosed with it, but they read something on the internet or they hear something in, you know, on Facebook or whatever it might be. And then that's what they want to try it because we're so prone and susceptible to this marketing. It's just constant repetition, you know, just being forced down our throat, you know, that we're just going to jump on it, you know, and that we just, unfortunately, we find out that really isn't what we should have been doing. Or if hopefully we're taking the time to figure that out. Some people just try to, you know, justify it up one side and down the other. And you know, it's just not the case, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's going to take, you know, a lot of education. And it's going to take a lot more of individuals like you being willing to share and, you know,
hallelujah.
Let people know that there are, you know, more credible resources out there than maybe what they're reading on the internet, and that you really do have to do your homework and ask questions. And, you know, we've been talking about not just trusting the process, although sometimes you got to do that because, you know, ask your questions, get your answers. And then you are going to have to trust the process sometime. But, you know, be sure that you're asking the why first before you do that. So, Michael, thanks so much for sharing everything you have with us this evening. We would be remiss if we didn't give you the opportunity to give a shout-out to anybody and everybody who have helped you or are helping you along your journey as you're helping those around you.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me. And, you know, obviously, you know, I first have to thank, you know, Joe and Corey. I mean, Dr. Joe Klomczewski and Dr. Corey Probst. I mean, what these two have done.
Before,
that's right. Just not only the industry, but just our organization, you know, being selfish right now. It's just amazing. And, you know, just the knowledge that, you know, we have and that we can get out to you know, the world, really, you know, because we are worldwide now. You know, it really, our goal is to make a positive impact and really change the game out there. And, you know, you can definitely find out more information about us. You can visit my site at thedietdocnashua.com. You can visit our main site at thedietdoc.com. But really get out there, take the time to educate yourself. And if, you know, just take your time, slow down, you know, don't try to lose, you know, 20 pounds in a week. You know, take a different approach from what you've been doing, a healthier approach, think long-term. And, you know, again, I appreciate you guys having me on tonight, and I'll look forward to talking to you both soon.
Yeah, most definitely. And do keep us posted on we didn't really get a chance to talk about Team K, but we'll have to have you back and talk more about that and just dive into all the stickiness that is contest prep and getting stage ready. So have a great evening.
Absolutely.
And we're going to be watching you.
You too.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Take
Good
care,
night.
Guys. Thanks. See you now.
Thanks, bye, Ben.
Whew. Love it. Love it. Love it.
Oh, I do.
Lots of great things to think about, you know, and just really challenge the status quo. I hope if our listeners get anything out of the shows that we put on, it's that they just get information for them to take back and, you know, research for themselves and get it figured out what's going to work best for them.
Yes. And what I like is that it's okay to ask why. You know, if you're being told to do something that's going to change your life, shouldn't it be in a question and an answer and a response that changes it for the better instead of just changing you for right now? Because I think, so, like he was saying, like Mike was saying, we're getting so caught up in the right now, we're not thinking about, you know, tomorrow and the day after. Because, all right, we get to the point we want to get to, but what road did we take? And if it's not a good road, you know, we got to go back that way. You know, everybody wants to get to Chicago, but what road did you take to get there? Because that's the road you're taking home. And if it sucks to get there, then it's going to suck getting back, and it's probably going to be even worse because, like I said, the car's so beat up that, you know, I it's a rant, and I'm not going to.
I hear you.
I'm not going to.
That's okay. We'll have some more shows down the road. We can circle back around. You know, it is just one of those broad topics and, you know, just battling misinformation. I mean, that'll be a battle or a war that's not going to end anytime soon, but battle by battle, you know, the lights will get turned on. And speaking of turning on more lights, we've got quite a powerful topic coming up this Thursday.
Yes. We're going to have Brenda Ray on, and she's been holding it down on the women's side of bodybuilding for quite some years. And she and I had talked about how just the women's physiques, because of good diets, good nutrition, good timing, good rest, all the things that science says will work, and it's been shown, you know, like he was saying, you could be flat on stage and, you know, think you look your best, but then you can be on stage with proper diet nutrition and actually look your best. And that's what's basically been changing the whole dynamic of natural bodybuilding, is people aren't starving themselves to stage anymore. They're actually getting on stage in a great way. But one of the drawbacks, it seems, is that, you know, women are being challenged for these gains that they're getting and being questioned if they're using. And it just breaks my heart when you know people are busting their behinds the right way, and they are taking all the right steps, and they are doing the right things, and they are getting the research, and they're doing everything they're supposed to do, and because they're doing it, oh, you're cheating. No. It's the person that basically is cheating and not seeing the results that basically has to shine light on someone else and say, well, they're doing it wrong. So we're going to talk with her about that because, you know, she's gone from one side of the pendulum to the other and heard, you know, just about every accusation you can think of. So, you know, we'll talk about our upcoming show, and we'll also talk about how empowered women need to be in order to basically get through the tough times mentally as well as physically, because some men aren't really men. They're just boys in men's clothing. So they basically basically accuse the women of the life that they wished they had, but it's like now they're just taking it out on people that really don't deserve it.
All right. So that's going to be some powerful stuff. Everybody, you want to make sure that you turn in or that you share the show with someone. Did I say turn in? Turn in
you
to
said
turn in.
In. You got turned up. That's what happened. You got turned up. Are you going to dab on us too? You going to dab on us?
I might. I can do that. I might.
I got the Bitmoji.
I bet you do. So if you're not tuning in, be sure you share the show with someone who should be listening in, because it's going to be a good one. So with that, on behalf of myself and Kaylin and P4P Real Talk, your body is a temple, so let's build it.
One brick at a time.